Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Atlantis Rising by James E. Wisher, narrated by Joe Hempel. Prologue. Child of Atlantis.
Child of Atlantis, we need you.
Merrick sat up in bed, his heart racing in the dark. His sheets were a soaked, tangled mess wrapped around his legs. How many times had the nightmare woken him this week? Every night, it felt like, though the memory slowly faded throughout the day. The details were vague, but that last desperate plea never changed. Child of Atlantis. What did it even mean? Atlantis was a fairy tale, the sort of thing you told your kids about at bedtime. Merrick was nearing 40. Why would he be dreaming about something so childish? Like every other morning, he had no answers. He'd fallen asleep with the TV on, and it was playing highlights of the Four Nations tournament. It seemed the boy wizard had made quite a splash on the first day of competition. He sighed, switched it off, and flicked a glance at the cheap digital clock sitting on the equally cheap motel nightstand beside his bed. 4 o'clock. If he went back to sleep now, he'd feel worse than if he just got up. Kicking the sheets off his legs, Merrick rolled out of bed and stretched. 10 days on the road usually left him eager to return home, but not this trip. Ireland was nice, but that wasn't why he hated to end the trip. All he had waiting for him was a divorce paper in need of signing. He held no illusions about the future of his marriage, but that didn't mean he was eager to end it. At least there were no kids to argue over. They'd sell the house, split the money, and go their separate ways, like the last 10 years hadn't happened. The short carpet was rough on his bare feet as he shuffled across the room toward the cramped bathroom. He flipped the switches and an overhead fan whirred to life. As the water slowly got warm, he stared at his reflection in the mirror. His eyes were dark from lack of sleep, but he still had all his hair and only one chin. He wasn't a horrible catch, was he? He traveled a lot for work, but made good money. Surely he could find a new girlfriend even at his age. His vision blurred for a moment, and when it cleared, his reflection showed someone different. It was still him, but with 3 gems embedded in his forehead and more woven into a non-existent beard. Merrick rubbed his eyes. Was he having a stroke?
Come to us. We need you.
The voice from his dream echoed in his mind. Merrick had met 2 wizards over the years, both haughty women that wouldn't give a nobody like him a second glance. But he'd never experienced real magic until now. At least he assumed it was magic, and not that he was losing his mind.
Who are you? Where are you?
We are the people of Atlantis, and we are trapped. You who share our blood must save us.
Merrick was an exotic meats exporter from Sentinel City. His family had left the Kingdom of the Isles 4 generations ago. His lineage was the blandest, most boring thing anyone could imagine. Nothing about it suggested magic of any sort.
I think you've got the wrong guy.
No, so few of us remain. We cannot be mistaken. The recessive is dominant in you. Time grows short. Come to us and all will be made clear.
Merrick had finished all his meetings for this trip. Why couldn't he take a little side adventure? After all the stress he'd endured over the past year, he deserved it.
How do I find you?
Travel northwest. You will know when you're close.
Then what?
The presence was gone, vanished as if it had never been. Northwest would take him toward the Atlantic coast. That made sense. If he was looking for Atlantis, naturally it would be near the ocean, or perhaps under it. He shrugged and got into the shower. At the very least, the drive should be nice, and maybe it would clear his mind. A little over an hour later, the sun was up and Merrick was on the road. The most directly northwest road was a narrow 2-lane country track. His rental SUV had a full tank of gas, so at least he shouldn't end up on the side of the road before he reached wherever he was going. The Emerald Isle lived up to its name. He drove past fields of the greenest grass he'd ever seen, filled with cows munching away. On a sales trip, he'd usually never bothered with a side trek like this. Time was money, after all. Eventually, the farms grew less and less common, and the road rougher. Two lanes eventually became one and a half. If Merrick met a truck, he didn't know what he'd do. But he didn't meet any trucks. He didn't meet anything at all. He could have been alone in the world. At last, 3 hours of driving brought him to a wide-open turnaround spot on a cliff overlooking the ocean. It was the most beautiful place he'd ever seen. Waves lapped at the rocks below, and a light, salty breeze off the water flowed through his rolled-down window. He would have liked to stay until sunset, but hadn't brought a picnic lunch. He parked and got out of the car. The instant he did, he felt something, like the voice in his dreams, but different. A quick look around revealed a path leading north about 30 feet from the cliff's edge. That was the way he was supposed to go. He set out at a quick walk. Branches hung low over the dirt trail, forcing him to constantly duck. He shivered. It felt 20 degrees cooler under the canopy. The pressure in his mind urged him to hurry, not in words, but just with a feeling. The difficulty of the hike forced him to take his time. He didn't want to end up on his face, after all. At last, he reached the end of the trail, a wall of rock easily 10 stories tall. What caught his eye was the cave entrance at the base. That had to be what the presence wanted him to find. If he'd known spelunking was in his future, he would have brought a flashlight. He considered and rejected making a torch. His outdoor skills were non-existent. Merrick couldn't make a fire to save his life unless he had a lighter and kerosene, and even then he was apt to burn himself.
Hurry.
All right.
He walked to the cave entrance. It was awfully dark in there. Maybe if he trailed his hand along the wall and moved slowly. Merrick crossed the threshold, and 20 feet ahead of him, a crystal flared to life, filling the tunnel with cool, blue light. He grinned. Maybe he really was on the trail of Atlantis. He kept going for a good 10 minutes before he finally glanced back. The tunnel was so dark he might as well have been in another world. He shivered, but kept moving. 20 minutes after entering the tunnel, he reached a large chamber lit by a crystal in the ceiling as large as he was tall. Below it sat a trio of stone tables, each with a metal chest on top. He rubbed his hands. Maybe there was gold inside. First, he opened the left-hand chest. Inside was a display of 6 gray crystals, each the size of his pinky. The right-hand chest held a single red crystal about the size of an egg. If he was going to find any real treasure, it would have to be in the central chest. Holding his breath, Merrick eased the lid open. His hand trembled. Inside were the 3 crystals from his dream, the ones he'd had in his forehead. Below them were 4 smaller ones that matched what he saw in his beard, as well as another pair that were as clear as glass. All his dreams were real. The dark blue central crystal pulsed with energy. He picked it up and placed it in the center of his forehead. There was no pain as it fused with his flesh, only a slight tightening of the skin.
Welcome, brother.
The voice from his dream was stronger than ever in his mind. What would happen when he added the other 2 crystals? Time to find out. Merrick took the 2nd crystal and touched it to his forehead, just to the right of the central shard. No reaction. It felt cold against his skin, a dead piece of stone where the first felt warm and alive.
Your flesh can only harmonize with a single crystal at a time.
How long until I can add the rest?
It is different for everyone. Perhaps days, perhaps weeks. You will know when the crystal feels warm in your hand. For now you must gather all the items and leave this place. The dogs of Lemuria will already be on their way.
Merrick hurried to collect all the crystals, stuffing them into his pockets as fast as he could.
How could anyone know I'm here?
This place is a trap. Much Atlantean blood has been spilled here.
Why bring me here if it's a trap?
Because without these items you can't complete your mission and bring back Atlantis. Escape the hunters and you can succeed. Die and the trap will be reset for the next unlucky child of Atlantis.
Merrick liked the situation less and less. What had been an exciting adventure was getting sketchier by the moment.
Can I do anything with the crystal to fight back?
The one you wear has already made you stronger and tougher than an ordinary human. Having the gray crystals on your person will protect you from the dog's magic. Beyond that, you have only your resourcefulness and will to rely on.
Great.
With the last crystal in his pocket, Merrick started back up the tunnel. It was as silent going up as it had been coming down. Exactly what resourcefulness was he supposed to rely on? He was a traveling salesman for a meat processing company, for God's sake. Merrick had never been in a fistfight. The closest thing to combat he'd ever encountered was high school football, and the gridiron wasn't a battlefield, despite what their coach liked to say. Merrick tensed when the light of the tunnel entrance appeared. His pace slowed until he came to a dead stop 20 feet from the exit. Would the killers be out there waiting for him? Given the madness of the day, he'd be crazy to dismiss the possibility. After half a minute of indecision, he straightened his shoulders and strode out into the clearing. A single figure stood facing him. Of average height and slender build, the stranger didn't look terribly imposing. Of course, the dark cloak covering him from shoulders to ankles and the deep cowl hiding his face obscured most of the details. All Merrick could see was a pair of black boots and a double-edged sword blade that angled across his waist to point at the ground.
"Hi," Merrick said.
God, that sounded stupid.
"I don't suppose we could go our separate ways and pretend we never met?"
"No." The sword rose to point at him. When it did, he got a look at the figure underneath. And what a figure. Her blue shirt and gray pants snugly wrapped a slim but still very feminine body.
"Atlantis will not rise again. Not on my watch. Gust!"
A sudden wind picked up dirt and gravel and shot them at Merrick, blinding him.
"Duck!"
He dropped to his knees. The assassin's sword passed so close to his head he felt the breeze. When he scrambled to his feet, they'd exchanged positions. She now stood between him and the cave. He held no illusions about his ability to outrun her. The woman had to be at least 15 years younger than him, and she looked like she worked out. What he couldn't figure out was why she didn't have a gun. She could have put two in his chest the moment he appeared and been on her way.
"Your crystal generates a kinetic barrier. It will stop bullets or arrows, but not a sword. Too much mass."
That was helpful, assuming he didn't get his head cut off.
"You dodged my blade once," the assassin said. "You will not do so a second time."
Merrick believed her. He couldn't outrun her or outfight her. That left only one option. He turned and sprinted for the cliff. She was right on his tail. As soon as the edge was in view, he leapt. The water glistened below him. Way below. Hopefully, those physical enhancements the voice mentioned would keep him alive. Merrick came sputtering out of the water and stared up at the top of the cliff. The assassin was gone. He'd feared the woman simply leaping in after him. In truth, he couldn't imagine why she didn't.
"Her sword would be less effective in the water, and the anti-magic properties of the gray crystals would render her magic ineffective. She will likely track you and seek a better opportunity to finish what she started."
"You're a barrel of good news. How can she track me if the crystals stop magic?" Merrick started swimming north away from his car.
If the assassin wanted to find him, that was a probable place for her to start looking.
"For those that know how to look, you appear as a void in their magical perception. Most wizards would never think to search for such a thing. But a hound of Lemuria will certainly be aware of the effect. Nonetheless, you should be proud. You are the first child of Atlantis to escape the guardian of the cave."
"Wait, everyone else you sent was killed by that girl?"
"Not her specifically, rather her predecessors. It's been 30 years since the last attempt to secure the crystals."
Merrick grunted and focused on swimming. He could feel the difference the crystal's magic was making on his body. Before, he would have been exhausted by now, but with the extra power, he hardly felt winded. By following the steep cliff that marked the water's edge, he eventually reached a small, secluded beach and pulled himself out of the water. There wasn't a soul to be seen, but a narrow animal path led away from the ocean. With no better options, he followed it into the woods. Walking with your clothes plastered to your skin wasn't a pleasant experience, but it beat getting your head cut off. He just wished he had some idea where he was and how to get back to civilization. "What exactly am I supposed to do now?" Merrick asked.
"You must break the spell that has held us in stasis for these many millennia. The key to bringing Atlantis back to the mortal realm is the large red crystal you retrieved. You have heard of Stonehenge?"
"Sure, everyone's heard of Stonehenge."
"The stone circle was constructed by the Lemurians around a crystal pillar that serves as the door to Atlantis. When the red crystal is brought inside the circle, the pillar will appear. There is an obvious indentation where it fits. Placing the crystal will restore the pillar, allowing Atlantis to return."
"Then what?"
"We are few in number thanks to the curse placed upon us by our ancient enemies. We will need to make contact with the leaders of this age. Those that can be swayed to our service will be supported and given power. Those who refuse will be replaced with more willing partners. Atlantis will be the puppet master of this world, and you will be a hero of our people."
Merrick grinned. No one had ever called him a hero. He liked the sound of it. After an hour of walking, the roar and rattle of a passing truck caught his attention. The road couldn't be that far away. He turned toward the noise and left his nice trail to beat a path through the woods. Lucky for him, the undergrowth wasn't that thick and his crystal protected his skin from scratches and scrapes. At last, a little after noon, he stepped out of the forest and onto the edge of the road. The nearest civilization would be one of the farms he'd passed on his way in, and they were miles away. He needed his car, but feared encountering the assassin again. She couldn't exactly murder him in front of witnesses. He pulled out his cell phone and said a short prayer that it had survived his swim. The manufacturer claimed it was water-resistant. Time to find out if they were all talk. He swiped the phone to life and let out a long sigh when the home screen appeared. He'd have to leave a nice review when he got to a computer. Even better, by some miracle, he had a signal. Not a great signal, but good enough to call roadside service. They'd send him a cab. He paused before dialing. "How do I hide this crystal? Anyone that sees it is going to get curious."
"You need only wish it to be invisible, and it will be to all save those with the blood of Atlantis."
That solved that problem. Merrick commanded the crystal to disappear. 2 hours later, a black and green taxi pulled up and Merrick got in.
"What the hell happened to you, mate?"
the driver asked, making no mention of the stone embedded in Merrick's head.
"Long story. My car's just a few miles up the road. I was too exhausted to take another step."
The drive didn't take 10 minutes. His car looked fine, and there was no sign of the assassin. Once his car was running, he waved at the cabbie, turned around, and followed him back to town. It seemed his guess about the assassin was right. She didn't want to attract any attention. Still, he harbored no illusion that she'd given up. As he made the walk to his motel room, he could almost feel her eyes on his back. Clean, dry, and dressed in fresh clothes, Merrick sat on the motel bed and laid out his full collection of crystals. His personal group sat on one side. Cold, smooth, and inert, they showed no sign of being ready to join the first one on his forehead. The 6 gray, magic-negating crystals, and 2 clear ones, rested on the opposite side while the large red one glittered in the center. It would probably be easiest to drive to Stonehenge, but that would leave him vulnerable to the assassin. Maybe a bus or train would be better.
"You cannot enter the Circle of Stones. The Lemurian's magic prevents anyone with Atlantean blood from approaching."
Merrick frowned. "Then how am I supposed to free you?"
"A dupe must be found. One with no connection to Atlantis, and stupid enough to carry out your instructions without too much thought."
Merrick scratched his head. Maybe he could pay a tourist to do it. Nah, they'd be sure to ask questions he didn't want to answer, assuming whoever he approached didn't think he was a lunatic. He'd have to find someone with the correct mindset.
We have been trapped for thousands of years. There is no need to rush. Best to do it right the first time. You must also seed the world with both the anti-magic and the detection crystals. Give them to those that fear and hate wizards as much as we do, preparing the way for our return.
Who should I give them to? I don't know anyone that could do anything useful for your cause, Merrick said.
We leave that to your judgment. Our knowledge of the mortal realm is limited. Just make certain to keep one to protect yourself.
Merrick didn't need to be told twice. What he did need was to start making plans and doing research. Bringing back Atlantis was going to be a far more complex task than he'd imagined, but he would do it. Hero of an entire race. That sounded much better than traveling salesman. His wife said he'd never amount to anything. He grinned. This would show her once and for all who was a failure. Chapter 1. The two arms of the motorcycle's front fork glowed as Kanryu used earth magic to shape the prongs into a decorative twisted pattern. The weather on the floating island was perfect today. A light breeze blew and the sun shone down through a clear sky. He was happy to work outside. Behind him, a simple shop constructed with magic had a sign over the door that said Kodachrome. He'd always wanted his own place, and now he had one. Since the madness 2 months ago with the LeFay Society, Kanryu had only visited Sentinel City to pick up his mother for a regular, short lunch. They didn't eat it in the city. Instead, he'd open a portal to London or wherever she wanted to go. The North American Alliance made it clear that they wanted him under their control. He made it equally clear that he wasn't interested in being anyone's pawn. They had a warrant out for his arrest should he appear anywhere in North America. Not that anyone had the guts to try and enforce it. One of the advantages of being the most powerful wizard in the world was that people tended not to bother you. Still, he saw no reason to push his luck. Better to avoid the place altogether. When the forks looked the way the client requested, he snapped his fingers, ending the magic. Another gesture sent the fork floating up into the slot on the bike's front end. The best thing about magic was that he didn't need a hydraulic lift. The whole chopper floated in front of him at the perfect height. He sighed, tightened the bolts, and lowered the bike to the ground. Done. He'd deliver it this afternoon and collect his payment along with any new projects that had come in. Are you really going to use your magic to play mechanic for the rest of your life? Maria Kane, the most beautiful girl he knew and the love of his life, stood with crossed arms glaring at the motorcycle like it was the bike's fault he wasn't following her preferred course. She wore her white robes and a gold belt at her waist that contrasted perfectly with her jet black hair. You could do so much more. Sure I could. Kanryu wiped his hands on his jeans and picked up the staff of all elements. The artifact allowed him to use magic without spells, as well as access his private library. But should I? I could run around trying to solve all the world's problems, but I'd probably just make new ones. I figure the best thing for me to do is to mind my own business. She snorted. Like that's going to last. You're too important to be allowed to just hang around here. You should at least come back to the academy with me and finish senior year. Get your degree. I'm sure the teachers would welcome you. And how long before the military showed up to try and take me into custody? No, thank you. When do classes start again? Day after tomorrow. Want me to drop you off early? I'm on my way to deliver the bike anyway. I guess. You'll pick me up for our Sunday date, though, right? Kanryu grinned and kissed her. Wouldn't miss it. He pointed the staff at an open patch of grass a few feet away, and a moment later, a door with a knocker that looked like a bearded old man appeared. Prime, Kanryu said. Quit sulking and get over here. We're leaving. A black book with an impossibly huge, fang-filled mouth glided over beside him. His familiar had been in a sour mood since it became clear Kanryu no longer needed to learn spells. With the staff, he could shape magic at will into whatever form he desired. That didn't mean he didn't appreciate everything Prime had done for him. Without the Scholomantic, he wouldn't have survived the past 3 years. A being of my magnificence doesn't sulk, Prime said. What do you call it? Kanryu asked. A period of melancholy. I'm over it now. Good. Kai, watch the fort. I'll be back in a couple hours. His personal ninja/bodyguard was currently watching over him from the border of hell, but she would have no trouble hearing what he said. As he and Maria made the short walk to the library doors, she asked, Kai lets you out of her sight without a chaperone now? If I promise not to do anything dangerous. Kanryu opened the door, looked back and pointed at the finished motorcycle. A light magic force field appeared around it and lifted it off the ground. Galen, the spirit that served as the librarian, didn't like it when Kanryu got oil or grease on the floor. It didn't matter that it vanished with a thought. The idea of making a mess in the room seemed to offend the ancient spirit. He willed the bike to fly in ahead of them. Maria followed it. Then Kanryu closed the door behind them. Inside, the familiar bookcases stretched in every direction. Only the smell of parchment was missing. Since the books were just physical manifestations of Galen's memory, they had no smell and little weight compared to their size. The only new addition to the library was a case that held a dozen elf artifacts he'd collected. Since he was the only one that could access the library, this was the safest place to store them. Maria had been studying them off and on this summer, but had made little progress. I'll drop you at the academy before I head to London. Maria nodded and sighed. This will be the first time we've been apart in a while. It's going to be strange not having you just a few floors away. You've got the runestone I prepared, right? If there's trouble, you can contact me at any time. I'll be there quick as thought. She hugged him. I know you will, but it still feels different. But enough talking. If we're going to do this, let's get on with it. Kanryu pictured Maria's room in the dorm and willed the library doors to open. Beyond them was a modest two-bed unit with minimal decorations. Three suitcases sat beside the bed nearest the door. Her parents had shipped them ahead since she wasn't arriving by train. Her roommate wouldn't get there until tomorrow, which made this a safe place to drop her off. One of the teachers was bound to notice his presence, but he'd be gone before anyone could reach her room. I'll miss you, Kanryu said. You could always stay, Maria said. Not a chance. See you Sunday. She gave him a final kiss and stepped out of the library. Kanryu waved and shut the doors. It was just him and Prime for a while now. He glanced at the demon book, who said, I'm not giving you a kiss. Kanryu barked a laugh and pictured the alley behind Pop's Wheels, the London bike shop that he subcontracted for. Kanryu left the library, sealing the doors behind him. As soon as he was clear, he dispelled the force field surrounding the bike and pushed it toward the loading dock at the rear of Pop's shop. The clatter of machinery filled the air. London was under major construction after the damage Morgana caused. Even with all their resources focused on it, Kanryu doubted the city would be back to normal for years. He placed the staff out of sight in a pocket dimension. Prime flew along beside him, entirely indifferent to what anyone might think. That supreme confidence, you might even say arrogance, was one of the few things he envied in Prime. Much as he liked to pretend otherwise, Kanryu hated disappointing people. The door to the workshop was open, and a familiar figure stood staring at a bike that had seen better days. In fact, judging by the amount of rust covering the engine, Kanryu doubted it had run in his lifetime. Pop liked to buy old bikes and fix them up for resale. The custom work Kanryu did for him was just a bonus. Hey, Pop. The old man turned and smiled through his grease-stained beard. He wore a leather apron that had two pockets overflowing with tools and a pair of old battered black boots.
Done already, Kanryu?
Yeah, see what you think. Kanryu pushed the bike up the ramp, put down the kickstand and leaned it over. Pop walked all around it, nodding to himself.
Gorgeous work, as always. I should have brought on a wizard years ago.
Kanryu grinned. There probably wasn't another wizard that would bother with this kind of work. They could make so much more money in so many other ways with their magic, it wouldn't make sense. Kanryu did it because he loved it, not for the money. Pop reached into a pocket and pulled out a roll of 100-pound notes, which Kanryu accepted. Got anything else for me?
Not this week, I'm afraid.
Want to join me for some fish and chips?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?